Hello and welcome to another episode of Crowdfunding Champions. My name is Rob Wilson and my guest today is Matt Kennedy, the founder and CEO of Fussy, the sustainable personal care brand who raised over £1.3 million on Seeders. Matt, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thanks, Rob. Yeah, it's great to be here and looking forward to having a chat.
And so for those who aren't familiar with Fussy, would you be able to start by giving us a quick overview of the business?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So Fussy is a sustainable personal care brand on a mission to banish single-use plastic from bathrooms worldwide. Our first product is the UK's most effective natural refillable deodorant. It's delivered straight to your armpits every month via our flexible subscription model. It's free from any parabens, aluminium, any nasties, 100% vegan, cruelty-free. Yeah, basically ticks all the boxes. But our belief really is that consumers out there want to make more sustainable choices. It just so happens that many of the options out there require them to make a sacrifice, be that in terms of convenience, be that in terms of effectiveness, or be that in terms of just a product that isn't very desirable. So we really focus on a design-led approach to all our products to ensure that we can really attract as many people as possible to our mission. Our success depends on us getting as many people on board with stopping single-use plastic as possible. And so to do that, we have to make sure we have amazing products.
And how did you come up with the idea and decide to launch Fussy?
Yeah, good question. I've always been coming up with ideas. My background, firstly, I used to be an engineer surveyor. I then moved into the slightly murky world, I suppose, of advertising. So I was actually working for the likes of Pantene and Gillette and some of the major polluters out there in the world. And this is where I really witnessed firsthand, I suppose, the ability for some of these brands to address the problems we face, yet their inability to do anything about it, be that shareholders they've got or targets they need to hit. And so there was a frustration there at work that I wasn't able to do anything about. And then at the time, also, my wife, Becky, was pregnant. And she was struggling to find a natural deodorant that worked. And so it was kind of a collision of frustration at home and frustration at work that led to us to start to look into Fussy. We then obviously, there was lots of kind of research into deodorants. And at the time, nobody was doing a refillable deodorant in the UK. There was two or three in the US. And so our mission was really to kind of be that, you know, first refillable deodorant in the UK and European markets.
And talk us through your funding journey. Understand that you actually launched Fussy on Kickstarter. Was that right?
Yeah. And to be honest, I think that was just so, so key to everything we've done. For reference, I have started a company in the past. It was a Japanese sake brand that was made from leftover sushi rice, but nothing at the scale and ambition that we have with Fussy. And I think what Kickstarter did for us, it allowed us to test the market. So I was working full-time in advertising at the time, along with my partner, Eddie. And we were working full-time and then doing Fussy in the mornings, evenings, weekends at a cafe down the road. And Kickstarter really allowed us to, I guess, use our marketing skills primarily, as opposed from our financial investment banker skills that you need, depending on who you're raising from, to put together a campaign on Kickstarter and test out the product and show that there was demand for this type of product in the European market. And then off the back of that Kickstarter, which went on to, I think we sold £100,000 worth of product. And by the way, for those who aren't familiar, this is where people kind of pledge money for a future product. So the product hasn't actually been made yet. They're just backing you. I remember explaining that to one investor and they couldn't quite believe that people had given us their money without a product there. So I think that really shows, you know, we've got £100,000, which was 3,500 customers, paying customers for a product that didn't yet exist. So it really showed there was demand. And off the back of that, we were then able to approach investors for a pre-seed of around £500,000 and say, look, here's the demand, here's what the product looks like. And that made the process a lot easier, I think. It's also really worth doing because you learn a lot about how to start a business, but at a much kind of smaller, less risky scale. So, you know, you set up email flows, you make a video, you figure out what your campaign messaging is, your pricing structure, manufacturing, operations, you know, all of that stuff, which then when you kind of, we went on to launch Fussy, I guess, 2.0 as a proper website, et cetera. We did all of those things just amplified up in terms of scale. So a really useful learning tool as well for founders.
For sure. And then you ended up going on Dragon's Den.
Yeah. Another key part of our journey. And really exciting time that was. So that went live on TV February this year. We filmed it in June the year before. So we'd actually only launched our product on a website for 1 week when we had to go up and film it. So we didn't have much to talk about other than the Kickstarter. But luckily, yeah, Deborah and Peter both invested. We were able to close that deal. And yeah, it was a real game changer for the business, if I'm honest, because we got 12 minutes, I think, of prime time airtime on BBC One, peak slot, organic TV. And you just can't pay for reach like that. We will probably never in the history of the company have that many people on our website again at one particular time. So yeah, really amazing experience.
And what's it been like working with the Dragons? I seem to remember Deborah actually featured in your recent Christmas promotion, right?
Yeah, she did. You know what? Deborah's like just such a good sport. It's probably how I'd describe her. She's not, you know, very hands-on in the business in terms of finances and business management, et cetera, et cetera. But she's basically there when we need her or when we've got a question. You know, she's a WhatsApp or an email away. And I think that's kind of a mutual understanding that we reach out when we've got something that we need help with. So very useful at putting us in contact with people or, like you say, getting involved with giving a celebrity kind of angle to adverts or meeting people in the office, and as well as being a very experienced businesswoman in her own right. So she's been great.
And so your most recent round of investment took place on Cedars. You were able to raise over £1.3 million from over 1,600 investors. Why did you decide to open up to the crowd and to launch an equity crowdfunding campaign?
Yeah, so I think it again goes back to the roots of our business, which you mentioned earlier, which was Kickstarter, and that community built is kind of like the buzzword now, isn't it? Everyone's saying build a community first, but we did. Like, it wasn't just a buzzword for us. We built on Kickstarter with people that bought the product before we had it. They fed back for us. They've been a key part of that. So really building upon that community made a lot of sense. And then, you know, post Dragon's Den, we'd also built an even larger community off the back of that very quickly. So it made a lot of sense. Yeah, it was always part of the plan. So we closed part of a round March earlier this year. As part of that round, we left some shares unallocated with the intention to then offering up to the crowd at a later date. And that date came by in, a couple of months ago. So always part of the plan. And I think just goes back to us being community built effectively.
And did you have any doubts at all about how the campaign would go?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. I think for any founder, and you know, I've had a lot of people kind of approach me afterwards and ask for tips and stuff. It's nerve-wracking, right? You're putting your brand out there. Is it going to flop? If it flops, what kind of signal does that send to potential future investors that might not invest? So it's definitely a risk. And I think, you know, not mentioning any names, but we definitely had some nervous investors on our cap table that weren't too sure that it was the right approach, but I believed it was. So we proceeded, but we managed that risk. You have a private launch, as you'll know, you have the kind of private launch first, which we were able to see what uptake was like. And, you know, I think we used that to then gauge if we were going to go public. Obviously that public private launch went, the allocation went extremely quickly. And we were able to know how large is your email list, and you can apply, you know, average percentages that you think might invest to the back of that and find out who's interested. I would say, like, again, because it's community led, don't rely on just people on Cedars finding it, basically. You need to have that community there, and you need to have confidence that you've got enough people to back you to help you get towards your target. I don't think personally, and I know it's, well, maybe a slightly harsh thing to say, but at the moment it's a very difficult fundraising environment for any founder. It's definitely challenging. I don't think that you should use crowdfunding as the solution to that, as tempting as it might be. You know, if you can't raise funds anywhere else, it's not a kind of a case of, oh, let's try a crowdfunder then. You know, I think you really need to think carefully about that and make sure that you've got the community and behind you before you do it.
And so how did you go about engaging with your community, and how much roughly did you have pre-committed before you then ended up launching on Cedars?
Yeah, so of the 1.3 million you see reflected in that raise, about 600,000 of that was already committed from investors and raised. So we went on to raise another 700 or so off the crowd, which is like still an amazing effort. You know, I think I said to my wife, I said, if we hit a million, it's good, but 1.3 would be amazing. So it was great to get there. In terms of engaging them, it was really, to be honest, heavily CRM led. So we really built out a lot of segments in CRM, in our Klaviyo email flows, segmenting by, you know, number of purchases, and really kind of adding a personal approach to all of those. So they would all get a message from me, and being very open and honest and open to dialogue, and, you know, offering calls for anybody that was investing over a certain amount so that I could answer any queries.
Roughly how long did that process take from start to finish?
Yeah, so this is probably where I'd say, you know, don't don't do what we did. But there's some great blog articles out there and stuff about timelines. And our great account manager at Cedars, Millie, would testify to, we probably left things a little late. So we actually pulled together the whole campaign probably in a couple of weeks. So we'd been talking to Cedars for a long time, but hadn't been clicking go. We knew the terms and the conditions and how it worked, but we hadn't started. And then it was like, right, okay, let's do it. And yeah, it was about 2 weeks. I spoke to my wife and said, look, you're not going to see me for a while. The team, thankfully, kind of was sheltered. They were working. We were launching lots of products at the time. So they took all that off me and focused on that. And I just took the crowdfunder, wrote a script, and with some great partners managed to pull all that together fairly quickly. And then luckily, I just kind of, yeah, really like getting hands-on with the email flows, et cetera, et cetera. So I was just working like a bit of a maniac to do all that. I would say, like, yeah, we rushed it, but we also knew we'd been ruminating on ideas in our minds for a long time. And also our experience from Kickstarter just really sped up the process. Actually, like the Kickstarter page when it's like really, really long and detailed in comparison to the Cedars page where they give you kind of like a tight word limit on every section, that really helped. So yeah, maybe don't do what we did, but it worked out okay.
And so was it just yourself that was managing the campaign, or did you rely on any external support services?
Yes, we used a company to help us with the video, produce the video. But other than that, it was entirely done ourselves. Yeah. Like I say, there's lots of great resources out there. I think you've spoken to Dan from Heights, have you, before?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, he's written an amazing blog post, a kind of an expose-all blog post on how to do a crowdfunder. And we certainly studied that as well. So, yeah, a lot of kind of speaking to people beforehand. I guess it's like planning and preparation was done, but not necessarily like written down, et cetera. But we'd been doing it for a while before that. But yeah, just ourselves in a film studio. We did run some adverts with Cedars, but personally for us, probably maybe not the approach we'd take next time.
Were those ads not very effective then in your experience?
Yeah, so I guess for us, we're so data-driven and we're used to having control of all of that data, being able to see all the data, make the decisions on the data. And if you take the ad package through Cedars, hopefully they won't mind me saying, but they've been great. But I think for us, that was the one part that maybe didn't work for us personally. Was, you know, you have to go through their agency and you can't kind of see the information as clearly as you'd like to. There was a lack of visibility there for us and that just didn't work out. And actually, we'd already hit our target, exceeded it. But an interesting test, I think it showed for us that, again, it goes back to having that community rather than relying on driving those purchases or investments post-launch. Like, it's the prep work and the building of the community beforehand that really makes a difference.
And you mentioned that you started conversations with Cedars fairly early on. Did you engage with Crowdcube or any other platforms before deciding to go with Cedars?
Yeah, we spoke to Crowdcube, but Cedars stood out to us particularly, I think, just based on the consumer brands that they'd had on there recently and speaking to the founders that had worked with them. So that was the decision to do that. Yeah, definitely worthwhile, though, speaking to both and obviously negotiating on costs and looking at how all that works. But I mean, for us, they're much of a similar product. So I think it was more about who had been on the platform and, you know, the investors that means, the investors that platform therefore has access to. And I think we found more alignment with the Cedars past campaigns.
And I'm sure it might be a bit too early to tell, but have you seen any additional benefits outside of the investment in terms of, you know, acquiring new customers or maybe feedback from those individuals that have invested?
Good question. And I would say definitely. And actually what it's been, it has opened some investor conversations from funds or similar who would be looking for larger tickets. It's actually opened up some of those doors because they've seen us on Cedars, family offices, companies in the States. We've got written about in the press because of the campaign. So again, it's that extra effect. Like Dragon's Den, we didn't go on Dragon's Den to get £50,000 because, like, if we wanted £50,000, we probably could have got it somewhere else. And we said that in the Den. They obviously didn't show on TV, but we said, we don't need the money. We're here for your advice, but also this is marketing. Do you know what I mean? So in PR, that's the same with Cedars, right? If you're going to have a really good, successful campaign, then there's PR and marketing benefits that you can hopefully take off the back of that. Yeah, it's definitely had some other benefits too. And also, you know, it's just a good process to go through. It just gets you closer to the business. It gets you closer to your customers, understanding what messaging resonates. Again, the same as the Kickstarter did. And for me personally, being from kind of advertising marketing background, it was quite enjoyable to put together that campaign, not as opposed to, but the usual approach is obviously, you know, pitching 50 to 100 investment funds and going through your same pitch deck and due diligence. And, you know, that can become quite repetitive. Whereas putting together a campaign and then pushing it for 30 days, it's exciting and it was good fun as well. Shouldn't underestimate the power of a bit of fun now and again.
I think it's a really interesting point. And what I observe as an investor going through the campaign is the level of engagement. I think it's always a really strong indicator where you have the founder or the CEO who is actually on the forums, they're replying, they're open, they're transparent. Because quite often you do have campaigns that are very closed. They have their cut and paste responses. And sometimes they can be a bit cagey if they feel that someone's asking maybe too many questions.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. And again, yeah, that's probably something I didn't mention, but pretty much instantly responding to messages throughout the campaign. It's just so important. Like, people are potentially give you their money. Like, the least you can do is have the decency to answer their questions in good time and take your time to do that. I also think it's just my kind of personality trait. I'm one of those people that if I get an email, I try to respond fairly quickly just because then it's off my brain rather than sitting on my brain. So if I know there's a question sitting on Cedars asking me about cash flow, if I don't answer it, I'm just going to get more and more anxious about it. So partly a fast response time driven by a bit of anxiety, I think. But yeah, you're right. You've got to engage. And I had a look at some other campaigns actually that were on there and was quite surprised at some of the turnaround times. And it's really interesting to hear that other investors will pick up on that. It's the same as our ad comments, right? Like, when we're running advertising on Facebook, I saw my wife do it on her phone the other day. She got an advert for a product. She didn't really watch the ad. She just scrolled through the ad comments and was looking at the responses from the company to the comments. It's exactly the same kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. And so, Matt, knowing what you know now, is there anything that you would do differently if you were to launch a campaign again in the future?
I'm just taking my time because I want to give something that could be genuinely helpful, I suppose. I probably wouldn't run digital ads again, personally. Or if I were to do that, I would look at how we could maybe do that as a brand pre-registration and maybe drive email collection. So we did do that for our Kickstarter. We generated a list of about 20,000 emails by running lead gen ads. So I would maybe look at having a longer lead period so that we could test doing stuff like that. The problem is then, of course, you're pulling in other areas of the business and taking up time and money and resources. So that happens. I would just give myself a little bit more time, to be honest, up front. But other than that, like, I don't want to blow our own trumpet, but it went quite well. So, and like, everything went fairly smoothly, even the legal part at the end, which I think some people can forget about maybe. We already had a cap table of 27 investors or something, and there's certain terms you have to agree. And so that's a good point as well, actually, is making sure that you're not just communicating with your new investors, but your existing investors as well, and being really communicative on that side before the campaign starts, so that when you can come to close the round, you can get those funds in the bank fairly quickly. So I think we did that within about a month. The funds are in now. We're now going through the share certificates, et cetera. Whereas I invested in a campaign on Cedars not so long ago, and I think it took 5 or 6 months before it actually closed. So yeah. So start earlier, maybe don't do paid ads, and consider not just your new investors, but your existing investors as well.
Just picking up on the point there, you mentioned that you actually invested in another campaign. I always think this is a no-brainer for other founders who might be thinking about crowdfunding, just go through that process themselves. Is there anything that you learned from that as an investor on the other side of the fence?
Yeah, definitely. I guess I learned kind of the information that they were willing to give away and not give away, because one risk factor is always the fact that competitors can openly see your data. And that was saying we were very, very nervous about going into it. But ultimately, we shared stuff that it's such a closed off world. It's such a small world out there in the startup scene that pretty much everyone knows, everyone else has everyone else's pitch deck. Our competitors knowing stuff like our cost of acquisition or our revenue numbers isn't particularly going to be a big issue. But when it comes to new product development and stuff like that, we were a lot more guarded, I suppose. It teaches you how they communicate to you. It teaches what they do at the end process. Yeah, it's just such a no-brainer, like you say, to experience it and look out for any weak spots in the campaign that you can particularly improve upon. Or you never know, you might find a competitor's brand out there that you want to invest in, and that might be a smart move as well. But I certainly went through the list of all the people that invested just to make sure there was nothing too dodgy happening there.
And just on that point, do you have any sort of plans for how you're going to engage with your investors moving forward? And a sort of follow-up to that, do you see yourself launching another campaign again in the future?
Yeah, quite possibly. So certainly first, in terms of investor updates, we're always very detailed with our investor updates. We'll be doing quarterly updates with Cedars. We do monthly updates with our funds, our investment funds. And that's a time, obviously to keep them engaged in your journey and what's happened to their investment, but also selfishly for me as a founder and as a team, it's a time for us to reflect every month or every quarter, go through every part of the business. And that's just a really good exercise, I think, for founders to do. So it should never be looked at as a you know, oh God, I've got to do an investor update. Flip that and think, oh, right, great. I've got to do an investor update. It's a really good time for me to set aside a few hours and go through the business and make sure I understand what's happening and what the numbers are saying. So we do that. Actually, also just the slight diversion, but I also find the same with podcasts like this. So there's a narrative out there that you get two types of founders, right? You get the type of founder that's just busy building the business, doesn't do podcasts, isn't posting on LinkedIn and just dedicated to the business, which is great. And then there's the ones that want a bit more limelight, that are doing more podcasts and getting themselves out there and maybe tickling their ego a little bit. Now, I think that's a bit binary, because I think if you're doing the latter, the podcast and et cetera, you're trying to promote the business. So hopefully people see that, like, you know, there's an element of that. But also, just like doing investor updates, doing podcasts and stuff like that is an amazing learning experience and opportunity for you to practice public speaking, to practice your pitch. You know, you're getting asked questions that you didn't necessarily know were coming. So it's all really, really good learning experience. And that's why I primarily do them. So really interesting to kind of look at those, look at the reason why you do things and don't always think about it, the time suck. And then it's also a really good opportunity to hopefully pass on your learnings. Like I say, we've had a lot of people ask us about our crowdfunding campaign. And if we're able to do a great podcast like this and then people listen to it, then you can share your learnings in a much faster way. Because I went off on a massive diversion, I've forgotten the second part of your question. Another crowdfunder.
Yeah, exactly.
Quite possibly in the future, not at the moment, but I would love to do one in the next 18 to 24 months, potentially, if the timing was right and we thought there was demand within our community, I guess.
Great stuff. And Matt, do you have any final top tips that you'd like to share with listeners?
I don't think so. Just again, goes back to community, taking the time to learn and also studying campaigns. Like that was something we did on Kickstarter. We found like the top four campaigns and we took all their pages and basically took the best bits, and you'll uncover insight. So do that. Find the best top five campaigns on Seeders and take inspiration, copy bits from them, whatever. Do you know what I mean? Copy bits from Fussy, oh, that would be a great honor. People were to do that. So yeah, do your research, do your homework, plan it all out, give yourself plenty of time, and like we did, I'm sure it would be great.
Matt, where can we find out more about Fussy?
www.getfussy.com. Yeah, go check it out. We've got lots of exciting things planned next year. You can sign up to our mailing list if you're not quite ready to purchase. But yeah, January is a good time to ditch the chemically antiperspirant and switch to natural, I would say.
Great stuff. Matt, really appreciate you taking the time today.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks for having us. Great to chat. Cheers.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. For more advice, head over to crowdfundingchampions.com and be sure to subscribe for the latest interviews.